I'd like to add my welcome to all of you who are fathers, and my condolences to any of you who may have lost your father or stepfather or whoever played that role over the past year. I always like to share little pieces of trivia about these unknown holidays. So here's one I found interesting. It dates me a little bit. But back before cell phones took over the world, what was that, 20 years ago, 25, when you actually had to, you know, call somebody specifically on a landline a lot of times, whatever, AT&T put out a thing that said there were more collect calls on Father's Day than any other day of the year. Which makes perfect sense, because if you call your mother collect, she's going to make you feel guilty about it. So, you know, whatever. So technology solved the problem that we didn't even know existed. There you go. Now, this has been an interesting week for me as far as dates go. This last Tuesday, the 13th, would have been my father's 95th birthday. He passed away in 1986. But I was also thinking this year, this last week, a lot about my teacher, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, that some of you know very well, but fewer and fewer as the years go by. He made his transition in the year 2000, so this is 17 years this year. And I remember we were over at the Woodruff Auditorium during his last service, and I was doing the job that Angela did with me today, and Kennedy was going to be doing his very last talk after 20 years on the Woodruff stage, and we had people hanging from the rafters, you know, all over the place, big crowd. Kennedy said they wanted to see the body while it was still moving. That's funny. And I remember thinking during the service, while he was talking, how much I was going to miss him. And I didn't realize at the time that 15 months later we were going to miss him for good. So you never really know when things are going to change. Because in many ways I considered him to be my spiritual father, in addition to being my mentor and my friend. And it felt funny to me to take over the stage when he retired. I remember coming out the week afterwards, some of you may have been there, the week afterwards where I walked out, not wearing a tie, Kennedy always wore a tie, and I got this wonderful standing ovation that had nothing to do with me. It had everything to do with the fact that he had made this place, that the center that we had then, into such a wonderful, beautiful, powerful experience that affected so many people. And the fact that we had continuity coming, almost father to son, it was almost like that, made it feel very, very powerful. Because when our father is still around, even though it's a normal cycle of life, we don't quite think of ourselves as grown up. Most guys. Wouldn't you agree with me? Most men who knew that, we do. That's how I felt with him, at least when I was starting out in the beginning. I took classes from him for about 8 years. I was a very slow learner. And he taught me most of what I know about this teaching. But he also taught me a lot about people. And he taught me a lot about myself, as he did with some of you who are here today. And I'm not sure he ever realized how much he taught me, because some of it I learned just by watching his example. But it becomes more and more obvious to me every single day that I'm involved with this teaching that part of him still speaks through me. In fact, I write something for the upcoming talk, or I say something in a certain way on the stage, and there's a part of me that goes, oh my God, that sounds like something that Kennedy would have said, or somebody else comes and says that too. But over that period of time, I realized that even though some of his wisdom is coming through me, even though I'm putting my own particular stamp on it, a lot of his wisdom came from his teacher, who was Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, who wrote the book The Science of Successful Living that Angela was just talking about. So Kennedy studied with him, and then he put his own particular stamp on it. But Dr. Barker was also imparting knowledge that he had learned from all of his teachers, because that's how we learn and grow. We're all part of an ongoing chain going back, a chain of wisdom and learning that stretches back maybe thousands of years or thousands of people, every single one of us, and that's pretty amazing when you think about it. Anyway, applying that idea to our Father's Day theme today, that means that there's always some part of our own father that lives on in us, as well as some part of our mother and our teachers and our friends and even lovers and companions that we've had throughout the years. Now, if you think about it, it's kind of interesting. On the one hand, we are all completely unique. That's what we talk about in this teaching. Every single one of us is one of a kind. We are all, as Dr. Holmes says, perfect individualizations of God. But on the other hand, we're all connected. We're all human. We all bleed the same color. Blood, we're all a blend of all the different people and ideas that came before us and touched us in some way. So in many different ways, we are a product of our past. All right? Now, physically, think about it. We are a product of what? Our parents' DNA. And they're a product of their parents and their parents. And if you go back 8 or 10 generations, you realize there were 2,000 people who were coming together to mix this past that eventually became the you here in the present. And mentally, we're all a mix, a mishmash of every idea that ever touched us, whether it came from our family or from school or from friends or a movie or a book. They don't have to be real ideas that happened somewhere, just something that came in our mind. And emotionally, we're all a blend of all the different emotional experiences that we have either had or heard about or read about, real or imagined, going all the way back to the day we were born, and maybe even before that, if you believe that we started well long before we showed up here and that we last a whole lot after and carry our personality with us. That's the physical and the mental and the emotional. But it's the spiritual part that really interests me, because our spiritual essence, get this, does not have a history, like our DNA and our memories and our ideas and all those different things. Our spiritual essence is completely in the present. Now, we may have church history and religious experiences and stuff like that, but our spiritual aspect has no past and no future. It's simply in the present. It is our current, always current, connection with God, with our higher power, and it just is. It's timeless, it never changes, so it's the source of all the different parts of our life going forward, which means our spiritual essence is the source of all the infinite possibilities that are available to us at any single moment. So our spirituality doesn't bind us in any way like our past does in so many of the other areas, which means whatever we desire at any time, whether we're looking for love or prosperity or connection or whatever it happens to be, we can open our mind to a greater idea in this moment, regardless of our past. We can put our heart behind that thought right now, right here, all right, and make it real for us in our life. Our past has no power and no effect at the spiritual level unless we give it that power. That's a big caveat, okay? You see, at the very center of it all, we are spiritual beings expressing life in a spiritual universe using divine intelligence and working through spiritual laws. That's what we are. Let me repeat that. We are spiritual beings expressing life in a spiritual universe, even though it looks physical, okay, using divine intelligence and working through spiritual laws. So the real part of us, the spiritual part of us, is invisible energy that has adopted a physical form so that we can participate in a physical world. So we can hug the people we love with physical arms, and we can see the beauty of a sunset with our physical senses. But in here, in the spiritual part of us, we are thought and emotion, we are heart and mind, we are intelligence and passion, constantly creating things, physical things, like houses and cars and jobs and stuff like that, but also creating very powerful, intangible experiences, like loving relationships, all right, and peace and beauty and paintings and music and all these other invisible things that once again come out in physical form. So we are the point where the invisible becomes visible. We are the point where the previously unknown becomes known. And it is our own personal level of awareness of this truth that we learn and develop that makes all the difference in what kind of mental, emotional, and physical experiences that we create for ourselves out of all the mishmash of ideas and emotions and DNA coming from our past that make up this thing that we call our life. That's what we do. Now, this is not a new idea. Spiritually minded people, and by that I mean not just the spiritual teachers, the great teachers that everyone has heard about, but anyone just like you or me who opens ourselves to a greater level of spiritual awareness, who try to expand our awareness, all right? People on a spiritual path have understood this connection between our inner spiritual essence and our outer physical experience for a very, very long time. People like that have paid attention, and they understand there's some kind of cosmic desire, a universal life force, invisible but very, very real, in every single one of us that urges the entire human race to move forward one idea, one invention, sometimes one person at a time, until the rest of the world catches up. Now, once we begin to live this truth, not just learn it or understand it, but actually live this truth, and we start to do it with complete conviction, we become that truth. We become that truth. And the truth that we become transforms us and quite possibly the rest of the world. That's why a man by the name of Arthur Schopenhauer, who was a great philosopher several hundred years ago, he once said, it's a great quote, he says, every truth passes through three stages before it is recognized. In the first, it is ridiculed. In the second, it is opposed. And in the third, it is regarded as self-evident. Very, very interesting. You come up with a truth, your truth, and even if it is your truth, at first, it will be challenged and ridiculed. Secondly, it will be openly opposed. People will try to drag you back into the fold. But if it's really the truth, eventually, it will become the experience that you and those around you share. All right? That's how change happens, okay? We are the ones who make it happen. We are the ones who transcend the past using the present to create the future. That's how we do it. Now, the reason I bring this up is because this inner desire that we have to create new and better circumstances in our life, even in the face of overwhelming challenges, which a lot of us are facing, it is a powerful part of our spiritual nature. It's a natural thing. It is our natural desire to grow and to evolve. And it's very likely something that we brought with us when we came here and probably will take with us after we leave. But what it really is, okay, and we need to recognize this, is the creative energy of life itself expressing a constant desire to live through us in greater and greater ways. That's what it is. It's like the proverbial dandelion slowly growing up through a concrete sidewalk. This life force is something inside of us that wants to love, it wants to succeed, it wants to prosper, it wants to see beyond the horizon. It wants to know things that haven't been known yet. And we've all felt this at some times in our lives. And when we are in tune with this, it is the greatest feeling in the world, bar none. Right? Anybody experience this? It's true, okay? It's like the joy that a child feels when they show up at a playground. A child can show up 4, 5, 6 years old, all right, never getting bored, never worrying about if they're doing it right, just experiencing in the present where they are. Everything's new, everything's exciting to that child. And even when it's time to go home, while they may be exhausted, the excitement is still there. They're just shaking when they're in the car going home. Such a wonderful, wonderful feeling. As spiritual beings, in the present, that is our natural state. And even if we choose to do nothing with our life, and there are a lot of people who do, this power in us knows what it wants to do and what it can do, and it waits. It waits very patiently until we decide to recognize it and to use it. And even if we don't, it will still find a way to show up through someone who is open. Now, we all know what I'm talking about, this feeling. In fact, all of the great spiritual teachers knew and tried to tell us that this same power was in every single person and we could all use it. But when these teachers, throughout history, tried to tell the people around them about this power that we all had, when they tried to tell their students, and they tried to tell their followers, when they tried to tell people around them who were living perfectly normal, average lives, who were scared of change, people who felt threatened and victimized by a dangerous world, people who believed they were powerless to change their human lives, these teachers had to reach them somehow. All right? They had to find some way to get this idea across in terms that everyone could understand. And the term that they used in the Middle East, which is where most of the Western religions came from, was Abba, which also means Father. Very interesting. So this idea of God as a Father figure started out with the best of intentions. It was sort of a metaphor of this power, okay? But as with so many other concepts in organized religion, once they got a hold of it, the original meaning changed. And it changed for different reasons. People wanted to use it for power or whatever it happened to be. And the changes they made to this perfectly logical and rational metaphor caused an incredible amount of confusion over something which, especially in an enlightened age like this, should not be confusing at all, but it is. But it is. In fact, this misunderstanding has caused many people's idea of God, okay, to remain stuck in an old patriarchal, dualistic model that was originally intended to expand our spiritual understanding instead of making it more limited, which is how it ended up. And until we can figure out how to get our collective religious traditions to accept a much more spiritual and scientific understanding of God, okay, and what it means when all the old prayers refer to this power as our Father, we're going to keep on being confused. We're going to keep on killing each other over the meaning of a single word. Now, fortunately, teachings like this one and the Eastern religions, I also put in that same box, that are not tied to a literal interpretation of all the old outdated prayers and writings, are way ahead in seeing the deeper meaning of words like father and mother when they're used to describe this power, this thing we call God. In a real spiritual context, these words, mother and father, have nothing at all to do with gender or personality or job description. If you're speaking metaphysically, which means above the physical appearance, we see father and mother are simply words used to describe the masculine and feminine principles that are both present and interlocking in the one God, in the one power that we are all a part of. Which means, if it's present in God, it's present in us. It's present in us. Now, Taoism, one of my favorite Eastern teachings, describes this as the yin and the yang. You know, the two little black and white tadpoles that sort of combine. We've all seen that. Yin is the feminine. Yang is the masculine. All right? Mother means the nurturing, supportive, regenerating part of life. And father is the focused, directive, and intentional part of life. The two are different, but they have to be together to really, really work. In other words, when we refer to God the Father, we're referring to that inner drive we have to express life, this urge that we have to create and to expand our awareness about the world. The problem is, and this is pretty obvious, many of us have a real emotional reaction to the word Father, usually because of our relationship with our own father. And that's not just a male or female thing. We all have different relationships. But the people who wrote the Bible, both the Old and New Testament, and the people who wrote the Quran, for example, they used the word father in a very specific way to promote a recognition of authority and respect and strength, all of which they felt were perfectly appropriate when you were referring to a power that created everything. But when we, you, me, everybody out there in the street, when we hear the word father, especially in a religious context, some people visualize a stern-looking man who's lecturing us for misbehaving, or some nice guy who drove us to the mall if we asked real nice, depending on your relationship. In other words, what comes immediately to mind is our own personal experience with our own father, whatever that happened to look like. We think about a human person that we can manipulate or bargain with. We think about somebody who pampers us, or maybe someone who ignored us or abused us in the worst case. And we unconsciously apply our feelings about our father to our beliefs about fathers in general, to God. That's how this expanded. And as a result, our idea of God becomes very, very limited. So we end up thinking about God and responding to God and relating to God in however we learn to pray as something separate from us. Not a power in us, as something separate from us, or as someone in a position of authority over us that we have to learn how to please or to obey, or else we'll never get what we want in life. All right? All the punishment stuff comes in, and all those different things that are a part of the old, outdated ideas. That's the kind of God that far too many people in the world have accepted as their own, which is why we have so many problems in the world between people of different religions, because everybody thinks their God can beat up everybody else's God. Just like a five-year-old, just like the song that Patrick was singing about. All right? So my God can beat up your God, but he wouldn't. This is the way that song would go, Patrick said. So here's the point I want to make this morning. If we still have a little bit of that inside of us left over some years ago, we have to understand that not only will that kind of God never provide us with lasting comfort or strength, it will never allow us to recognize and to accept the responsibility that we have to use this inner presence, this creative, intentional power that we have, which is the presence of God working in us and through us. Now, I know that most of you here, even if you were raised in the Jewish tradition or the Islamic tradition, whatever, are at least marginally familiar with the Christian New Testament. It's one of the most popular, at least in this part of the country. And I want to refer to it now because in it, the teacher Jesus, who was a great teacher, who by most accounts was a very rational and spiritually grounded individual, he frequently, or at least we are told to, through the translations, used the word Father when he was referring to God. But most open-minded and unbiased biblical scholars, and there are some, in spite of what you've heard, they admit, if you look at the very earliest translations, this person, this teacher, was not necessarily talking about God as his Father exclusively. He was talking about God as the universal Father. As a universal Father, as a universal power of life that he knew was flowing through him and through every other person. All right? He knew, as the great, there's a great mystic by the name of Meister Eckhart in the 13th century, and he once wrote, "We are all the only begotten sons of the only Father." It was a great statement. The translation. So let's look at a few of the well-known statements. Let me read through these attributed that so many people like to quote and see what these statements sound like when we substitute the word power or life or presence or law for that word. For example, when Jesus said, "The Father and I are one," what if it stated that life and I are one? Could be a translation thing. In other words, he was expressing the unity of God and humanity and the creation that was part of itself, which is a very powerful spiritual idea. Or when he made the statement, "It is not me, but the Father in me that's doing the work," he was telling us that we all had this same power within us to do what we need to do, to accomplish what we saw or heard that he accomplished. He knew that he himself wasn't the power doing the healing, but that he was directing it. The Father in me is doing the work. That he was directing it. That's why he said to his followers, we are told, "Greater things than this you shall do." Greater things than this, even, you shall do. Because he knew that this power had no limits. It had no limits. All right. He also knew that as each person's awareness of this power expanded, not just awareness of what it is and how it works, but awareness of its presence in us, it expanded what they could do. And that's what he was trying to tell. Now, I'm not picking on anybody. This is not just a traditional religious issue. I have been to enough conferences, New Thought conferences, which this teaching is a part of, metaphysical teachings where people believe in all the stuff I'm talking to you about right now, where people say that they believe in the God within, which is perfectly fine. But then when they start to talk, you realize what they're talking about is a little guy on a throne about 6 inches big in their chest with a beard. Okay, and they pray to this God within, sort of like they swallowed a marble or something. There's a thing in there. And they pray to it the same way they used to pray to a God out there. Absolutely no difference. That's not a change of consciousness. That's a change of venue. From up there to down there. That's all it is. Okay? Now, because the Father in me is not a person. It's a presence. Okay? It's a power. It's a process. It's all of these things. It's neither our own personal sugar daddy or our own parole. Neither one of those, okay? It is an impersonal, which means equally personal to everyone, loving, supportive, and dependable power that expresses itself through and responds to our deepest thoughts and beliefs without judging or criticizing or making sarcastic remarks, as the sisters used to tell me in Catholic school. It's the creative power of life everywhere present, and it is completely at our beck and call because that's how it reacts and interacts with us. Finally, when Jesus said, we are told, it is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, he was telling us that we don't have to do anything to impress this power or to gain its support. He was telling his followers, if you can get the English here, that God can't not support us. Yet that God can't not support us because we are what it is. We're an extension, we're individualizations of this power. And supporting us is part of what life does. All we have to do is work with it, and it appears in the form of logical, natural, and unchanging spiritual laws, an infinitely changeable substance. And it will work for us exactly the way we believe that it's going to work. So that means that it can become in our life health, wealth, love, and success. But it also means that it can become sickness, poverty, loneliness, and failure. All right? It depends upon what we think about and what we believe. But when some people hear about that, they go, well, what kind of a father is that? Which tells me that they just don't get it. They just don't get it. You see, just like the popular image of a perfect father, okay, I use Cleaver, remember Leave It to Beaver? Ward Cleaver, okay? I used to use Bill Cosby, but it didn't work anymore. So we'll use Ward Cleaver or some of the others back in the 50s, okay? God does not try to protect us from our own misguided thinking. It has given us the power of free will, all right? It simply responds by reflecting back to us, as our experience, what is in our heart and mind. It gives us what we expect. It gives us what we believe. It fills our cup to overflowing with whatever we keep thinking about, and it will provide an answer to any questions that we ask. But to get the results most of us want, that means we need to expect the best instead of the worst. We need to think about the good instead of focusing on the bad. And we need to ask the right questions instead of complaining about the answers that we keep getting. In other words, as we begin to know something in secret, which means know it in our own mind, the Father who seeth in secret will reward us openly. The teacher said that too. It all ties together. You see, we all have different relationships with our own fathers based on a whole lot of different things that happened while we were growing up. Okay, and maybe even after we grew up. Some of us have wonderful fathers who worked hard and still had time to love and play with us. I was fortunate enough to have that. Some of us had fathers who were, as a friend of mine once described it, more like distant providers. They did the work, but they weren't around all that much. A few of us may have fathers who didn't treat us well. Too many people experienced that. And they may still find it hard to forgive. Whatever our situation happened to be, there's a strong correlation, psychologists tell us, between the way we see God and the way we remember our Father. But a writer by the name of Anne Sexton, very interesting woman, she made a very interesting observation when she said, "It doesn't matter who my father was, what matters is who I remember he was." It doesn't matter who my father was, what matters is who I remember he was. That same philosophy applies whenever we find ourselves having a knee-jerk reaction to the word father when somebody uses it in reference to God. You see, it doesn't matter who or what God is. What matters is what we believe God is. Because that's what determines the place that God is going to have in our life. And what we choose to believe about God is not God's decision. It's ours. That's the freedom that we've been given, and that is the freedom that we need to learn how to use, because it's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I, and so it is. I know it's getting stuffy. We'll be out of here in just a few minutes. They asked if we wanted the windows open. I didn't think it would be an improvement. So let's just take a moment to yourself. A lot of ideas moving around. I know different reactions to many of these ideas based on our past, but let's just right now be here in the present, bringing body, mind, and spirit all in the same place at the same time. Recognizing that we are the product of life's unfolding. We are where we are in the present because so many people, so many ideas, so many experiences have come together to create who we believe we are. But we recognize that we are more than that. We recognize that even with our past experience, no matter how we were raised, no matter who we had in our life or didn't have in our life, who we are now is a powerful, creative, spiritual being. So in this moment, we have the power to create in our own life wealth at whatever level we choose, health at whatever level we embrace, creativity and work at whatever level we choose, but the greatest power we have is the ability to create love. And we don't create love outside of us. We allow the love inside of us to come out. Because there is a limitless amount of love within each one of us. And as we do, it touches others. And the love that we share with them becomes a part of them. And they share it with others. And that is how we expand. That is how we end hunger. That's how we end war. That's how we end discrimination in so many ways. That's how nations can begin to work together to create a greater world for everyone. This is the power we have, individually and together. So knowing this, we give thanks for all that we have been given and for all that we have yet to give. And we take this awareness on ourselves. We expand our awareness of what God is, of what we are, and what the world is. In knowing this, we accept this. We accept the greatest idea that could ever be and allow ourselves to go even beyond that. We release this awareness into consciousness, letting it be so. Join me in saying, and so it is.